Okay, we're beginning on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nishba tevetel et mitzvah. A person takes a shvuah in order to undermine a mitzvah, velo bitel, and he does not bivatel, he does not nullify the mitzvah that he was required by a shvuah, patur. Lekayim, if he takes a shvuah in order to affirmatively do what he was supposed to do, velo kiyem, and he doesn't do it, patur. In both those cases, you are patur. Shehaya bidin. It was logical extension or a logical argument could be made, shei chayav, that a person could be chayav, ki divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, similar to the position of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Right now we have the girsa in our Mishnah that follows the girsa of Rashi, which is the kaf hadimyon. So the kaf hadimyon is ki divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, which means, and as Rashi notes this, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira is not the author of this Mishnah. He does not agree with the Mishnah. But what the Mishnah is doing is giving you the position of the Mishnah and saying that you could have possibly come to a different conclusion based on that position of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, which is, I'm Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, ma'im ha-reshut she'enu mushbala mihar Sinai. When it comes to something which is optional, where you have no obligation from Har Sinai, you are not compelled in any way to do this, Hayu Chayav Alav, then if you take a Shvuah and you fail to live up to your commitment, then you are responsible, and you would have to bring a Korban if you fail B'Shogeg, you'll get Malkot if you fail B'Mezid. Mitzvah, Shumushpa Aleh Mihar Sinai, a mitzvah where you're already compelled to do it from Har Sinai, Einu Din Shei Chayav Aleh. So then if you take a shvua to reinforce what you're already obligated in, then certainly over there you should have to be responsible for carrying out the shvua that you said. So that is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira's logic. Amru lo, the chamim say back to him, lo, im amart bishvuat harishut, when it comes to a shvua about items that are not compelled by the Torah, optional items as we'll call them, shekein asaba lav kehein. In those cases, you can do something both in the positive and negative formulation, which means you can say, I will eat this loaf of bread, I will not eat this loaf of bread. You have both options in those cases open to you. Tomar b'shvuat mitzvah, when it comes to a shvuat mitzvah, shlo asa balav kehein. The negative formulation cannot be supported like the positive formulation. That is, if a person says that, I will eat matzah on Pesach, so that's the positive formulation. He says, I will not eat matzah on Pesach. The shvua falls away. He's mushba v'omid mahar Sinai. He can't undermine the obligation he already has. So you can't then formulate it in the negative side. Shim nishba levatel v'lo bitel patur. Because if you take a shvua to be mevatel, to nullify a mitzvah, to undermine a mitzvah, and you do not do that, you are patur. No such shvua will take effect. So this is the Mishnah. You have two opinions in the Mishnah, the position of the Chachamim and the position of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. The position of the Chachamim is very clear. They say that any shvuah related to a mitzvah is irrelevant. Because we have, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, the Gemara is giving a bright thought to explain to us how this works and how all these limudim work. But their basic premise is that you have to be able to formulate things both in a positive form as well as a negative form. If you cannot formulate it in both directions, that is not a shvuah that takes effect or that is binding in any way. So they say, listen, when it comes to shvuah to mitzvot, there's only one direction it can go in, and that is that you are affirming whatever the Torah demands of you. So that is one direction. To nullify or to go against what the Torah says, you don't have that possibility. Since that option's not available to you, you don't have two sides of the coin, there is no such sort of shvuah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says, wait a minute, we can separate or we'll bifurcate the din. In one case, we'll say that, yes, you can take a shvuah, the kayem et mitzvah, in order to sustain and to do what you're supposed to do, then you take a shvuah. And if you want to do that, he has a kal v'chomer, which shows you that if it's in optional matters, you can now obligate yourself in something you're not obligated in already, then certainly something you're already obligated in, then reinforcing that obligation should obligate you as well. And then we'll be fine. You can't do it in the negative side? Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira is not bound by that. We'll see why in the Gemara. The reason Rashi says, Kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, is because the Mishnah begins in the following manner, which is, Nishba the batel at the mitzvah, velo bitel, patur. Lekayim, velo kiyem, patur. That means that it is the position of the chachamim, who say that you can't take a shvua to be mebatel a mitzvah, and you can't take a shvua lekayem et a mitzvah. And so, if it was really divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, then it would have to be chayav, because Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira would say that you are chayav in those cases. That is Rashi's logic, and he says, v'hachinka amar, nishpa lekayem velo kiyem, patur, she'ilu ledivrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, haya bedin lechayvo. If it was up to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, you would be chayav in those cases. So he sees the Mishnah as declaring Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira's position as an opposition to the position of the Chachamim, which at the beginning of the Mishnah. Over here, the Balei Tosafot disagree, and they uphold the Girsa that Rashi changed, and he says that even though Rashi changed the Girsa, I think that the original Girsa is correct, Ulriva ayanira lekayim girsat asfarim, that mode Rabbi Yehuda b'mnishpa shelo le'echol nevela v'achal dipatur. That has to do with the way that you formulate your being mekayim the mitzvah. This goes back to a Tosafot that we discussed back on Chof Amud Bet. In that Tosafot, Tosafot makes a statement that is the exact opposite of what he says over here. And Rabbi Kiv Eger on Chof Amud Bet, in that Tosafot, Divrei Hamatchil Dechilo Nadar, takes issue with the Tosafot's position over here on Chof Amud Bet, and he points you to the Tosafot here on Chof Hazayin Amud Aleph, where he disagrees and he contradicts himself. But the Tosafot back there suggests, similar to what Rashi is saying over here, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira believes that you can take a shvua in the two following manners. You can take a shvua b'kayem et mitzvah, which says, I'm going to take a shvua to eat matzah, which means that you're positively affirming what you're supposed to do. Can you also take a shvua shelo lecho chametz, not to eat chametz? So over there, you are taking a shvua l'kayem et mitzvah, but it is a negative formulation. So what does Rabbi Yehuda believe when you take a negative formulation? So the Balei Tosafot back on Chof Amud Bet seem to indicate that that, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, would also be a fine type of shvua and would be binding. And Rashi basically says the same thing over here. Rashi says that when you say nishba levatel et mitzvah, velo bitel patur, lekayem, velo kiyem patur. If he took a shvua to be mekayim the mitzvah and he wasn't mekayim, maybe he's patur, because Rashi has no manifestation where you could be mekayim a mitzvah and you would not be allowed to take a shvua according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Tosafot over here says that's just not right, and he says v'dafka b'lekayim a mitzvot k'gon l'shev basukah o l'ochol matzah mechayev Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda only believes that you are chayav when you take a positive statement reaffirming a mitzvah to say that you are otherwise obligated in. You say, I'm taking a shvua to sit in the sukkah. Take a shvua to eat matzah. That works. But if it's the other way around, if achiita b'yushami, d'bishalo ochel nevela v'achal, if he says, I'm not going to eat a nevela, which again is an affirmation of what he's supposed to do anyway, not to eat a nevela v'achal, mode Rabbi Yehuda d'patur. Rabbi Yehuda agrees you are patur in that case. He believes that the formulation is only in the positive affirmation of a mitzvah to say, not in a affirmation by desisting from doing a lo taseh. And in that way, Tosfot can fit Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira into the Mishnah, even when it says patur. And that's what he says. When he says l'kayim, a person took a shvua l'kayim et ha-mitzvah. What was l'kayim et ha-mitzvah? It was to say shelo l'achol nevela. He took a mitzvah to say, I will not eat a nevela. Velo kiyem, and he didn't keep it, patur. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. So now, shayav bedin sheichayav divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. That is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, because Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira subscribes to the fact that you're patur. There are cases where you take a shvua l'kayem et mitzvah, and you will be patur. And that means that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira can fit into this Mishnah, and he can be the author of the position in the beginning of the Mishnah. Obviously, nishba levatel et mitzvah, everybody agrees that you can't take a shvua to be mevatel a mitzvah, but Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira also agrees that you could take a shvua l'kayem et mitzvah, and still it would not be binding, because you took it to affirm a negative precept. You took it to say, I will not eat a nevela, I will not eat chametz, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira believes you are patur in that case. So that's a very key difference between Rashi and the Balei Tosafot, as well as the Balei Tosafot here, and back on Chof Amud Bet. We're going to go back to that Balei Tosafot a little later and revisit it on Chof Amud Bet again, because It has other ramifications, but here you have a fundamental machloket as to what you're allowed, according to Yudim and Teirah, to take a shvuah for. According to Rashi, any shvuah to affirm a mitzvah, whether it's a positive commandment, a negative commandment, is binding. According to Bali Tosafot, it's only binding when it is in a positive formulation. It's for a mitzvah to say, a mitzvah lo to say, if you are affirming that through a shvuah, by taking the same thing and saying, I will not eat chametz, I will not eat a nevelah, that is not binding, and therefore they get a difference in their girsah in the Mishnah. Rashi says, kid divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, because he cannot reconcile with the Mishnah at all. Whereas Tosafot says, divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, because he can reconcile with the Mishnah. He can be the author of this Mishnah. Right now, we move to the Gemara. The Gemara now is going to bring a Braita to help us to understand. The Braita has different sections. We'll explain a small amount of them, and then the Gemara will come back and explain the whole Braita. Tanu Rabbanan. Yechol nishba lebatel et mitzvah velo bitel yeichayav. A person, you would think, took a shvuah to be mevatel a mitzvah, and he did not do that. He did not nullify the mitzvah. He did not abrogate the mitzvah that he had said he would do. Yei chayav. You think he'd be chayav for that? Tamalomar, la'ra, odeheitiv. The pasuk says, la'ra odeheitiv, mahatava rishut, af hara'a rishut. Just like hatava is something that's optional, so too hara'a is something that is optional. Again, we're going to come back and explain all of this. Otsi nishba d'vatel et mitzvah. Well, through this braita, now we would exclude taking a shvuah d'vatel et mitzvah. Velo bitel. And he didn't do a bitul. Meaning that if he took a shvuah to nullify some mitzvah, and he says, I won't sit in the sukkah, I will not eat matzah, and he doesn't do that, we say that he's patur. That shvuah has no binding effect on him. Shu patur. Yochol nishba lekayem et mitzvah, velo kiyem sheichayav. So you would think, okay, that's if you're going to nullify. When you're trying to contradict the Torah, that's where the shvuah fails. But here, where you're trying to affirm what the Torah says, there maybe you should be chayav, like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Talmud Lomar, la'ra, ole'etiv. Ma hara'a rishut, af hatava rishut. Just like hara'a, things that are negative, are things that are optional, so too things that are positive are optional. Otsi, nishba, l'kayem et mitzvah, v'lo kiyem, shu patur. So now I've excluded two items. The first of which is, if I took a shvuah to contradict the Torah, not a shvuah. The second one is if I take a shvuah to affirm the Torah and do what the Torah says, not a shvuah. This is clearly the position of the Chachamim, not the position of Yehudim and Teir. It's explaining why the Chachamim disagree. And again, the Gemara will go into more detail to help us understand this. Now obviously, all of this is not like Rabbi Akiva's Shita, because we saw before that Rabbi Akiva believes that you have a riboy miyut a riboy, and the miyot excluded a dvar mitzvah. Over here, they're learning out the dvar mitzvah from la'ara l'heitiv, which is clearly not like that position of Rabbi Akiva. Now, yochol nishba la'ara le'atzmo v'lo hera. You would think that if a person takes a shvuah to do something negative to himself, v'lo hera, and then he doesn't do it, yochol yehei patur. You would have thought he'd be patur for that. Tamalomar la'ara l'heitiv. Ma tava rishut? Af ha-ra'a rishut. Just like hatava is rishut, so too, ra'a is rishut. Now over here, we'll give the explanation to this because the Gemara doesn't explicate on this so much, but what the Braita is saying is if a person takes a shvuah to injure themselves, to be chovel in themselves, that's lehara. He wants to do something negative to himself, he is going to injure himself. You would think that if he took such a shvuah and he didn't injure himself, that he'd be patur. Talmud Lomar, the Torah says that you are chayav for that because that is optional. And since you have the option to injure yourself and you don't do that, then you violated the shvuah. Balei Tosafot, ask your question. Is it a machloket as to whether a chovel ba'atzmo is an iser d'oraita or not an iser d'oraita? So the Balei Tosafot say, kulachach bava lo tzvicha, elish mi'inan. This whole section of the Braita comes to teach you that dam rashai lachbol ba'atzmo, that this Tana believes that a person has permission to injure themselves. There's no restriction, mi'doraita, to injure oneself. That's why it's a reshut. You have the option to injure yourself. Since you have the option to injure yourself, if you do not follow through with the shvuah, then you're going to be held accountable for that. Now, the Rimi Gash and others say that that does not have to be true. You could explain the Gemara that even though it's Asur Midoraita do Lachbol Batzmo, it's not an explicit Isur Midoraita. The Isur Lachbol Batzmo comes out of Limudim, and since it's not as explicit, you could argue that it doesn't have the status of Mushba Bomed Mahar Sinai, and that maybe the Shvua could affect it. That's how he tries to get around this problem of saying that this Braita is favoring the opinion that it is Mutar Lachbol Batzmo. Obviously, we paskin. Not like that, that one is not permitted to be chovel batzmo, one is not permitted to injure oneself. So now, the braita continues. We've had three cases so far. One which says, if you want to be mevatel a mitzvah, no go. If you want to be mekayim a mitzvah, no go. You want to injure yourself? Okay, that shvua is binding on you. Now that is because, just like when you do something positive, it's optional. So if you say something negative and it's optional, then you are bound by that shvua. Avi nishbala ra latzmo velohera sherishut biado. So now I will say that that type of shvua is binding because in the case where he's going to do something negative to himself, injure himself, and he doesn't do it, he has the opportunity or the right to do it, and he didn't do it. Yochol nishbala hara le'achirim. What happens if he takes a shvua to injure others? Not injure himself, but to injure others. Velohera. And then he doesn't go ahead and carry out whatever he said he was going to do. Shei chayav. Maybe there should be chayav. Tamalomar, lara, oleitiv. Mata varushut, afara arushut. Again, it has to be something that is optional. Here, you don't have that option. To injure others is not within your purview. There's a clear din d'oraita not to injure others. And since you may not injure others, your shvua to injure others is not binding. As the Balei Tosfot point out over here, that's not really a big chiddush over here, because that's the same thing as basically saying, you're being nishba levatel et mitzvah. Right. So this is just a setup for the next line in the Braita. It's just setting us up to do the next thing, which is, otzi nishba l'aral achirim, I will exclude a shvua which is taken to negatively affect others, Velohera, and you don't carry it out, Shana Rishut Biyado, because you don't have permission to injure others or to do something negative to others. Minayin lerabot hatavat acherim. How do I know that if you want to do something positive to others, that you are then obligated? Tamid lomar o lehetiv. That comes to teach you that if you do want to do something that is positive to others, which was within your purview, the o, which seems to be over here, the extra word o, Lahara o lehetiv. The O over there is a ribui. So the ezihi harat acherim. And now we have the final line of the braita. What does it mean to do something detrimental to others? Aket ploni ve'etzaret mocho. I will hit so-and-so, or I'll split open his head, meaning to injure someone else. And that's the same thing. Lahara latzmo is the same thing as to injure himself. And that's where you get the difference in the braita, which is to injure oneself. As Tosafot says, this Tana believes is okay, and that's why the shvua is binding. To injure others, which is not permitted, is not binding in the shvua, but it sets you up. Why do they tell you about achirim? Because that's only when you're trying to do something negative. You're trying to do something positive to others, you are bound by that, because of o lehetiv, and we'll have to understand why you need a riboy to include O leitiv or hatava over here to others, because that's something that's optional to you. You can choose to do good to others, so why should that be a question as to whether you can take a shvua to do good to others? The answer is the problem that we face with the mitzvah, which is that it can't go in two directions, which is that you can only do hatava l'achirim, you can't do l'hara l'achirim, and so you're missing that balance of the positive and negative formulation, and so you need a specific riboy to include doing something good for others, even though you can't do the exact opposite, which is you can do something beneficial to them, but you can't do something negative towards them, despite that fact, when you take a positive formulated shvua, it is binding on you when you are directing it towards others. When the Torah says, lara uleitiv, we know that the definition of lara uleitiv, and we've said this before, can be one of two things. That is, lara can be a negative formulation. I will not eat. A uleitiv can be, ochal, I will eat. So that's one way to say lara uleitiv. There's another way that you could interpret lara uleitiv, which is, lara means it'll have a negative effect on me, and uleitiv means it'll have a positive effect on me. irrespective of the formulation, the question is, what is the outcome of that shvua? If I take a shvua that has negative repercussions for me, despite the fact that I'm formulating it in a positive sense, that could be lahara, meaning that you could separate the two issues out. The Gemara axiomatically says you need both. That is the underlying assumption of the remainder of the Gemara, that when we say lahara ulehetiv, lahara means you formulate the shvua in a negative formulation, which means I will not eat, but it also means that the shvua will result in something that is negative, or the repercussions are negative for you. And just the opposite, lehetiv means I'm making a positive formulation, ochal, I will eat, and it has to be something that will be positively impactful to you. So the Gemara does not separate. You could easily have just separated between the two. The Gemara does not, and that's the underlying assumption of everything that goes forward now, is that lahara and lehetiv mean both the formulation and the result have to be of the same genre, which is that it's going to be a negative formulation and a negative repercussion, or it's going to be a positive formulation and a positive repercussion. And now the Gemara is going to say, umimai dekrai bedavar reshut ktive. How do you know that the psukim are speaking about a reshut? Dilma bedvar mitzvah ktive. How do you know the psukim are telling you the hara leitiv is reshut and not a mitzvah? Balei Tosafot say over here, it's not trying to say exclusively about a mitzvah, but a mitzvah and a reshut. I mean, how do you know that the psukim don't include shvuot that are about mitzvot and not just shvuot about reshut? The Braita takes it as a given that we're speaking about a reshut and not about a mitzvah. Where do you know that from? And this is it. Lo salka datcha. You can't have that opinion, or you can't have that assumption. Debeinan hatava dumya dahara'a. Because you have to have hatava, which is something that is positive, the same way that something is negative. Vehara'a dumya dahatava. And the negative has to be similar to the positive formulation. Da'akish hara'a dahatava. Because there's a hekesh that takes ra'a and says that it has to be similar to hatava. Ma hatava? When it comes to hatava, eina bebitul mitzvah. When it comes to a hatava, it cannot be speaking about the nullification or the abrogation of a mitzvah. If you take a positive formulated statement, which for instance you say, I will eat matzah. So when I say I will eat matzah, I've made a positive statement about eating matzah, and I'm also doing something positive, which is I'm mimikayim the assay to eat matzah. On the other hand, if I say I will eat chametz, so in that case I've done something in a positive formulation, but it has negative repercussions, which is that I'm saying I'm going to eat chametz, but I'm violating a mitzvah. That is not what we call hatava. That's not positive because you're doing something that is positive in terms of your eating, but it's negative for your soul. And so therefore it's not hatava, it is not something that is good through and through, both in its formulation and its repercussion. So that means that that cannot be what the pasuk is speaking about, because it fails the test of hatava. So we know for certain the pasuk's not speaking about someone who takes a shvua to eat chametz. That doesn't fit into the word hatava. And again, that's given that axiomatic equivocation that you must formulate it positively, and that you must have positive repercussions. Given that, it cannot be this situation. So, af hara. If that's true, then when it comes to the negative formulation, eina bebitul mitzvah. It can't be to be mebatel a mitzvah. So therefore, if hara'a cannot be with a bitul mitzvah, that means that you cannot formulate the statement in the following manner. You can't say the hara'a is, I will not eat matzah, I will not sit in the sukkah, because that leads to a bitul mitzvah. We already saw from hatava that bitul mitzvah is not an option that is available to you. So what's left then? The only way you could formulate something negative would be mikayim the mitzvah, which means that you say, I will not eat nevelot, I will not eat chametz. Hara'a gufa hatavahi. In that case, the negative statement is actually a positive repercussion. I'm saying I will not eat chametz, but then I'm mekayim the mitzvah. I will not eat nevela, I'm mekayim a mitzvah. So you fail on the second part, which are the ramifications, are positive instead of negative. So for that reason, those two formulations now are discarded, because neither of those can work. So we've eliminated the possibility that you will take a positive formulation that is mevatel a mitzvah. That means also a negative formulation can't be mevatel a mitzvah. And then the only thing left is a negative formulation that is mikayim a mitzvah, but then that fails the test of hara'ah, because then it's not ra'ah in the sense of both your formulation and your repercussion. Ve'kish hatava lahara'ah. And the hekish works the opposite way as well. Ma hara'ah eina b'kiyum mitzvah. Just like by hara'ah cannot be about a kiyum mitzvah, that we already figured out because we just said, if you say, I will not eat chametz, I will not eat nevela, then yes, you said a negative formulation, but you're mekayim a mitzvah, and by definition, that is not ra'ah, that is rather hatava. So af hatava, so too in the positive formulation, einu b'kiyum mitzvah. The positive formulation can't be in a kiyum mitzvah. So you can't have the positive formulation that says, I will eat matzah, I will sit in the sukkah, because we just eliminated the possibility that kiyum mitzvah is the way that you can formulate this, because we just said kiyum mitzvah is not an option, because you connected it to hara. Just like hara cannot be about a kiyum mitzvah, so to atava cannot be about a kiyum mitzvah. The only thing left to say is a positive formulation that violates a mitzvah, which is say that I will eat chametz, I will eat nevela. That case, ha-gufa, hatava, gufa ra'ahi. That hatava is a negative repercussion. You're saying something in the positive formulation, but the repercussions are negative, and so it fails the test of hatava. The basic premise of the Gemara here is the hekesh between hatava and hara'ah eliminates the possibility of a mitzvah being the topic of the pasuk of the ra'ah lo'etiv. Because, by definition, we've eliminated all the different options that you could have had because of that hekesh. Each one of them, the hatava formulation says, you can't say something positive and be mevatel a mitzvah because that's a negative repercussion. That means even a negative formulation to be mevatel the mitzvah, not an option to you because of the hekesh between them. Then the only thing left for you is to say that you take a negative formulation to affirm a negative precept. And to do that, then you end up with a positive repercussion to a negative statement. If you do that, then you don't have hara'ah. And same vice versa. If you take a negative statement, that is to mekayim a mitzvah, then it's not called hara'ah, that's called hatava. So then you can't make a positive statement that will be mekayim a mitzvah because of the hekesh between them. And that hekesh then eliminates the possibility of mekayim a mitzvah. What's left? But you take a positive formulation, that is, mevatel a mitzvah, that doesn't work, because then you are hara again. And so the logic just says that if I connect between hara and hatava, then I have no options that are left within mitzvot, where you could have a manifestation that would comply with the requirement that it both be a positive formulation and a positive repercussion, and a negative formulation and negative repercussion, and have a hekesh which allows it to be both a hara or a etiv. That is the Gemara's explanation for the Braita, and that's what it means before when the Braita said, ma tava reshut, af hara reshut, and then before, afterwards, ma hara reshut, af hatava reshut. Those were the two limudim that the Gemara just laid out for us. Gemara says, ihochi bidvara reshut, nami lo mishkachat la. If you do that, then why are you saying only by a mitzvah? Even by matters that have nothing to do with mitzvot, you're going to run into the same problem. So now, as Rashi explains this over here, if you take a positive statement and you say, I will eat something that is beneficial for myself. You say, I will eat spinach. So spinach is good for your body, and you're formulating it in the positive formulation. So now I have a positive formulation with a positive repercussion. But now if I take that and apply it to the negative formulation, the hara'ah, I'm going to run into the same problem, which is, if I have to have the hara'ah look exactly like the hatava, then so too the hara'ah must be something that is beneficial to you. Because just like you in the positive formulation did it something that was beneficial to you, you have to do something that is beneficial for you also in the hara'ah. Well, what's the only way to formulate something that's going to be beneficial for you in the hara'ah? That is to say, I will not eat something that is negative for me. So if I say, I will not eat things that are bad for me, so for instance, I won't eat fatty foods, so now I've formulated a negative, and it is something positive, but that's the problem now. Because your hara'ah is not really a hara'ah anymore, because it turns out to be a hatava. And vice versa. If you start with the hara'ah, which says, okay, hara'ah means I must formulate in the negative. I will not eat foods that are good for me. So I have a negative formulation, and I have a negative repercussion. So that means if I now try to bring it to hatava, I have to speak about a hatava, about foods that are negative for me. So now, what am I going to do? Foods that are negative for me, if I formulate it in the positive, I will eat foods that are negative for me, I will eat fatty foods, then, again, you have a positive formulation, but you have a negative repercussion. So, what you have here is, if you compare the hara'ah and the hatava, then, in each case, if you demand that the hatava look like the hara'ah, or the hara'ah look like the hatava, then you're never going to be able to create a scenario where you get a positive statement with a positive repercussion, and then a negative statement with a negative repercussion. Again, just to go quickly. So if you say that the negative formulation has to be the same as the positive formulation, that means just like the positive formulation was something that was beneficial to him, so too the negative formulation has to be something that was beneficial to him. But if it is something that is beneficial to him, then it's really hatava, and it's not hara'ah. So even though it's negatively formulated, it's still hatava. So even if he says, I will not eat fatty foods, that's a negative formulation with a positive repercussion. It matches the hatava now, but it is not hara'ah. And vice versa. If the person takes a neda hara'ah, which is that he says, I will not eat spinach, I will not eat foods that are good for me, so in that case, the nevuah that he's taking is detrimental to him and about things that are to his detriment. Then similarly, when he takes a shvuah in the positive formulation, he'll have to say it about things that are detrimental to his health, similar to the hara'ah, which means that he would have to take a shvuah that I will eat fatty foods. So yes, he made a positive formulation, but the repercussions of that are negative, and therefore you don't really have hatava. If you're going to demand equivalence between the hara'ah and the hatava, that's going to make it impossible for you to ever get this case where you're going to get a hara'ah that is all ra, or a hatava that is all hatava. Tosfot says, why do you have to press so hard to get the hara'ah and the hatava to be so balanced or so opposite each other? And he gives an example where he says, I can come up with a case where you can have hara'ah and hatava, and they will be fine, offsetting each other, and not press it so far that it eliminates the case. As Tosfot says, the malaru lakish legamre, achi ekshe hatava gufa hara'ahi, hara'a gufa hatavahi, kevin shanu motzim lashvotam. We could create some sort of equation that equates them without taking it so far that it has to be exactly equal. In that way, the Baal Tosfot suggests that you could have come up with such a scenario. And so Tosfot says in the end that you really may be able to come up with such a case, but the Gemara assumes that you cannot come up the case, and therefore it has to go for a different method of limud over here. Since you cannot find it by reshut, now you didn't prove anything. You told me that the reason that it can't be speaking about a mitzvah is because it's impossible to create al-hara'ah ne'etiv. But you just showed me as well now that it's impossible to create al-hara'ah ne'etiv with regards to reshut as well. So now you have no proof as to whether the pasuk is speaking about a mitzvah or reshut. Ella mid the itzrich o laharabot hatavat achirim. The fact that you needed o to include hatavat achirim shmamina bidvar reshut ktive. From there you can see that it's clear we're speaking about a davar reshut. Disagadatcha bidvar mitzvah ktive. Because if you think that we're speaking about a mitzvah, hashto harat achirim itrabe. Here, if you tell me already that doing something negative to people is included, hatavat achirim miboye, then doing something that's positive, do you need that? So if you were speaking about a dvar mitzvah, here when you spoke about harat achirim, we already included that. Then hatavat achirim miboye, when you have to do something positive, what would you need to tell me about? Meaning that if you could do something that's against the Torah, hatavat acherim to kiyum mitzvahi. But here, where you're trying to affirm what the Torah says, so then you wouldn't need to say anything about it. The fact that we come and include hatavat acherim shows you that it has to be speaking about a reshut, because it's not relevant by the case of a mitzvah. And the only reason you need the ribui of hatavat acherim is because we're dealing with a reshut. We're dealing with an optional issue, and an optional issue is then you can make a choice. When it comes to harat acherim, no way. That's not in your purview. To do good to others, to do something positive to others, that is in your purview, and there would be a reason to include it. So that is the proof. Now, the Baal Tosafot will point out, why the Chachamim, the Mishnah, say the failure of a tshuva, the kayim et mitzvah, is because you can't be in a positive and negative formulation. Just simply say that, the Rabot Acherim comes to teach you that it can't be speaking about a mitzvah. The fact that you need to include Hatavat Acherim means the Hara can't be speaking about a mitzvah. And if that's the case, then you would have had a source for the fact that it's not speaking about a mitzvah. So the Baal Tosafot say, V'lav Pirchai, Dehine Kiyum Mitzvah Lo Ktiv Hocha, Mikom Nelif Mikal V'chomer. Even though Kiyum Mitzvah is not written here, you could have learnt it out of a Kal V'chomer. Which means that over here we're speaking about Bittul Mitzvah, and then you might have said that through the Kal V'chomer of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateira, that you could have included Kiyum Mitzvah. So that by itself is not enough to tell us that it's not speaking about a mitzvah. It needs to be the combination of two things. One is Ola Tavat Acherim comes to show you that ribui, that the pasuk is speaking about reshut and not about a mitzvah. And number two is the fact that a mitzvah can't be formulated both in the positive and negative, that gets rid of the possibility of nishba the kayemet a mitzvah, to take a positive shvua in order to be mekayem in the mitzvah. So each one of them helps you out. How do I know the Harale Etiv in the pasuk speaking about reshut and not mitzvah? Because you need a ribui of atavat acherim, which isn't relevant by mitzvot. It's only relevant by reshut. So the Harale Etiv is definitely speaking about a reshut. Then, once I have that, how do I know beyond that, that nishba, the kayem and a mitzvah, is not a kal v'chomer that you can learn from Yehuda ben Bateira? That's because it doesn't have the hein and the lav. It doesn't have the positive and negative formulation. And that's why the Chachamim say that none of those mishvot are binding. There's no shvua l'kayim et mitzvah, no shvua l'vatel et mitzvah. There are no shvuot that relate to mitzvot at all. I'm just going to take a small digression now to speak about that. Tosafot back on Chaf Amud Bet. The Ramban says that the din of neder is exactly like that of a shvua. And that is, just like you cannot take a neder to be mevatel a mitzvah, so too you cannot take a neder l'kayim et a mitzvah. So the Ramban views the two as being equal. So just like a shvua, it does not work, the vatel et a mitzvah or the kayem et a mitzvah, so too a neder doesn't work, the vatel et a mitzvah or the kayem et a mitzvah. And even though we do have manifestations of a neder that can undermine a mitzvah, that's only in a case of a shev v'al taseh, which is that the person took a neder about an object, and then that object causes a problem with the kiyum mitzvah. Other than if the neder is taken in a way, for instance, he says, I will eat on Yom HaKippurim, that neder will not be chal. You can't say that that is mevatel a mitzvah. And since you can't take a neder to eat on Yom Kippur, you also can't take a neder not to eat on Yom HaKippurim. That is because the Ramban believes that a neder can only take effect b'shev al taseh, because that's an isur chepza. But a neder b'kum baseh, which is only chal because of a chiyuv on the gavra, that cannot be mevatel a mitzvah. And therefore, for the Ramban, a neder can never be taken to be mikayim a mitzvah, and certainly you cannot take a neder the batel et a mitzvah. Therefore, according to the Ramban, ein chiyuv gavra chal b'hafla'a, the batel mitzvah b'chlau, b'min nedarim, b'min shvuot. That you don't have that ability, nedarim and shvuot are equal. But as Rav Soloveitchik points out, the Baal Tosafot disagree with this view of the Ramban, and they believe, you can see this at the end, the Tosafot on Chaf Amud Bet that we mentioned before, that he says, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateira, it says, you can be nishvayim l'kayim et mitzvah, koshke nidarim, shechalim levatel, sheyicholu l'kayim. That certainly nidarim that take effect to be mevatel a mitzvah, certainly they could take effect to be mekayim a mitzvah. And Rav Soloveitchik goes on to show that the Baalei Tosafot believe that a person could take a neder to eat on Yom HaKippurim, or take a neder not to eat on Yom HaKippurim. And even though if he took a neder to eat on Yom HaKippurim, he cannot follow through on that neder, that's a technicality. The neder does take effect, but he's overridden by the fact that Yom Kippur has a chiyuv karet associated with it. But that means that there is a manifestation of a positive statement of a neder. That means that you could also take a neder to not eat on Yom HaKippurim, and that would be binding. And therefore he believes that the Baalei Tosafot, unlike the Ramban, think you could take a neder, l'kayim et ha-mitzvah, even if it is the reaffirmation of a negative precept. Whereas the Ramban sees a neder in the same category as shvuah, being a shvuat shav, and having no application whatsoever. So Gemara says, V'hai o mibayile l'chalek. Wait a minute. You need the word o over here in order to divide up between lara o le'etiv. Because you would have thought that lara le'etiv means you must take a shvua that is both lara and le'etiv at the same time and violate both of them at the same time in order to be chayav. O comes to the chalek and tell you to be chayav for lara by itself and le'etiv by itself. Gemara says, L'chalek lo tzarich kra. To be mechalek, you don't need a pasuk. Hanicha the Rabbi Yonatan. That works well according to Rabbi Yonatan. El Rabbi Oshaya, Ma'ika the Meimar. According to Rabbi Oshaya, how does that work? This is a machloket we've seen a number of times, machloket throughout Shas, which is, whenever you have a vav in a pasuk, how do you view that vav? A vav can either be a vav a chibur, or can be a vav a chiluk. And so when I have a list of items, how do I view those items? Is the Torah telling me that I need to do all of these items, or I need to violate all these items, or is it saying that each one of them by itself is sufficient? And that is machloket here between Rabbi Yonatan and Rabbi Oshaya. They are speaking about the pasuk that's found in Parshat Kedoshim, ki ish ish asher yekalel et aviv et imo mot yumatz, aviv v'imo kilel tamav bo. So now, the way it works is ish asher yekalel et aviv v'et imo. It says a person who curses their father and their mother. Ein li'el aviv v'imo. So he's reading v'et imo, the vav, to be a vav achibur, which says that the person seemingly is only chayav if he curses et aviv v'et imo, both his father and his mother. Aviv v'lo imo, the father without the mother, or imo v'lo aviv minayim. How do you know that's the case? Tamal Omar, aviv v'imo kilel, aviv kilel, imo kilel, divrei Rabbi Oshaya. The way that Rashi explains it is that in the pasuk, the aviv v'imo appear twice. The first time it appears in the pasuk, it says, ki ish ish asher yikalel et aviv v'et imo. In the first case, yikalel is juxtaposed to the aviv. Yikalel et aviv v'et imo. In the latter part of the pasuk, it says, aviv v'imo kilel. The word kilel is juxtaposed to the imo. And that's how Rabbi Oshaya learns that each one of them independently you'd be chayav for cursing. So Rabbi Oshaya says that if you have a vav in a pasuk, that means and. And that means you would have to violate both of those issues in order to be chayav, unless the pasuk states otherwise. And that's the case here. In the case of aviv v'imo, he says you would not be chayav until you curse both of them. He needs a specific limud of kilel aviv and imo kilel to teach you that you have to separate between them, and each one of them independently would result in a punishment. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, mashma shneim kechad, mashma echad bifnei atzmo. He says, you're misreading the vav. The vav is not a vav achibor. The vav is a vav achiluk, which says, ish ashi kaliv et aviv, v'et imo, or his mother. It's not and his mother, but rather, or his mother. And so the vav is a vav achiluk and not a vav achibor. And in that sense, you actually have a isur that applies both to mother and father, or a mother or father, and there's no need for a special limud. Ad shivrot ha-katuv yachtav. And Rabbi Yonatan's position is that a vav is a vav achiluk until the pasuk specifies otherwise. For instance, it uses the word yachtav. Lo tachrosh b'shor v'chamor yachdav, or semru pishtim yachdav, that you're not allowed to wear kilayim. In those cases where the Torah says yachdav, it's specifically telling you that in order to be in violation, you need semer and pishtim, or you need shor and chamor. Each one independently will not give you a violation. And as the Balai and Tosafot point out over here, Rabbi Hoshaya uses the word yachdav to teach you additional dinim, that only if they're tied together. It's not enough that they're plowing together, they need to be hitched up together. It's not enough that you have a beged semer and a beged pishtan, you have to have them sewn together. They have to be attached together. And that's what Rabbi Hoshaya will use with the word yachdav. But Rabbi Yonatan says the word yachdav is teaching me not to learn like I would have learned otherwise. Rashi and other places in Shas says the fact that it says yachdav by shor b'chamor and semer and pishtin shows you that in other places that's not the case. And so therefore it is a vav achiluk. The Balei Tosafot in other places disagree with that and say it's not a diuk because here it says yachdav, in other places it doesn't. But rather, when the Torah gives you a specification, yachdav, then there is a necessity to have both of them. But otherwise, a vav is just a vav ha-chiluk. And so that's what the Gemara says over here. According to Rabbi Yonatan, you wouldn't have a problem over here because you don't need the O, l'hara u'l'heitiv, you don't need the O to be mechalek. Even if you just wrote l'hara u'l'heitiv, according to Rabbi Yonatan, that would mean l'hara or l'heitiv. But for Rabbi Hoshaya, if you did not have the word O there, l'chalek, then if you had written l'hara u'l'heitiv, my assumption would be that you'd have to violate both l'hara and l'heitiv, otherwise you would not be chayav. So he needs the word O l'chalek. If he needs the word O l'chalek, then how can you use the word O to teach you l'rabot hatavat acherim, which is then the source for the fact that we said that the hara l'heitiv in the pasuk is speaking about reshut and not about a mitzvah. So if that's the case, how does Rabbi Hoshaya square with this braita? So afilu teima Rabbi Hoshaya, you can even have Rabbi Hoshaya fit in over here, v'savrala ki Rabbi Akiva. He holds like Rabbi Akiva, d'darish ribuye umiyute. So as we noted before, the braita clearly does not follow the position of Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva learns the miut for dvar mitzvah from the fact that you have a ribuy, miut, a ribuy, the riba kol, and miut was miyut a dvar mitzvah. So Rabbi Hoshaya will be miyut a dvar mitzvah, but he will subscribe to Rabbi Akiva's position and learn it through Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yonatan will learn it out of the word O from the braita that we brought over here. Or he could learn it from Rabbi Akiva as well, but he has the option to learn it in either way. From Rabbi Hoshaya, he'll be bound to learn it from Rabbi Akiva's position. So Gemara says, Iyamart bishlama b'davar reshut k'tiv. If you tell me that hara l'heitiv is speaking about a dvar reshut, mimayet dvar mitzvah, then it makes sense that riba miyet v'riba is a case of reshut, and the miut, the exclusion, is a mitzvah. Eliyamar b'dvar mitzvah, if you tell me that hara l'heitiv is speaking about a dvar mitzvah, and that means that the pasuk, when it has the riboy miut, a riboy, is a dvar mitzvah, tiv mimay kamamayet, then what's left to exclude? If you're chayav for a shvuah and a mitzvah, you're certainly chayav for a shvuah on a dvar reshut. And then there's nothing left to exclude. Now, even though the Balei Tosafot point out, we have other items that we would want to exclude, including Rav and Shmuel's positions that we have seen, that either it has to be both able to be formulated in the past tense, future tense, has to be formulated in a hein and a lav, or b'shanota tiyadua, or you wanted to change something that was obvious, all of those could be things that you could be mimayit. So Yesh Lomar, Tosafot gives the same answer he gives yesterday's daf, which is the shkulim hein, they're all equal plane. All of these items of the same nature, same genre, and if you were going to include them, you have to include all of them. If you're going to be mimayit them, you have to be mimayit all of them. And the miut, there's only one miut over here, and so you couldn't be mimayit one because you have to be mimayit all of them. And you can't not include all of them because if you include one, you have to include all of them. And so therefore, Tosafot says, those would not be good things to be mayate. Or, he says, then you wouldn't need the word dara or dava. It would be enough to say lasot and shelo lasot, and you wouldn't need the lashon of hara'a v'hatava. So you could have excluded those items using different language. The fact that it used hara and hatava makes it clear that it's coming to exclude a dvar mitzvah. That's the way that most of the Rishonim read it. It happens to be that the Rimi Gash, has a slightly different girsa over here, that even Rabbi Hoshaya is going to agree over here, because Rav Gash explains that even Rabbi Hoshaya doesn't need that over here. Because when can you say that the vav is a vav of chibur? That's when the two are not contradictory. That's when you have a vivimo. So the fact that you have to curse both of them to be in violation, they're not mutually exclusive. On the other hand, haram and etiv are statements of the opposite. And so, of course, lahara and etiv, it can't be that you need to have a hara and etiv to be in violation. By definition, hara and etiv are going to be separate entities. So even Rabbi Hoshaya, according to the Rimi Gash over here, can use the word o and say that it's extraneous, because he would not say here that the vav would be a vav of chibur because of the fact that lahara and etiv are basically inherently contradictory. It makes it that Rabbi Hoshaya could agree in this case. And then the remainder of the Gemara over here is just understanding Rabbi Akiva's position, nothing to do with Rabbi Hoshaya, but just explaining how, according to Rabbi Akiva, we also come to the same conclusion that it's excluding a Dvar Mitzvah. And so this part of the Gemara then would be independent of Rabbi Hoshaya, and it's not that Rabbi Hoshaya holds like Rabbi Akiva, but rather we're trying to understand how does Rabbi Akiva come to the same conclusion that the Hara Letiv is not speaking about a Dvar Mitzvah, but a Dvar Rishut. Right now the Gemara continues. Am Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, Ma im HaRishut. Rabbanon Shapir Kamerle, the Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. The Rabbanon have a strong case against Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, which is that you can't formulate a Shvuah, the Kayim et HaMitzvah, in a positive formulation and then in a negative formulation. So how does he have it that you can only take a shva the kayim et mitzvah, but then you can't take a shva the vatel et mitzvah, and that means that it doesn't have the two sides of the ra and the etiv? Atu atavata chirim. Don't we have another example, another paradigm that was brought in the Braita by atavata chirim? Lafavagav deleta bichlal harata chirim. Even though you don't have the possibility or the option to do negative to other people, nevertheless, we said that the O comes the Rabot, Hatavat Achirim, that to do something positive for others is allowed. V'Rabbi Rachmana, the Torah gives a reboy to include them. Hachinami v'kiyum mitzvah. So too by a kiyum mitzvah. Afga deleta b'bitum mitzvah, Rabbi Rachmana. Even though it doesn't exist by a bitum mitzvah, the Torah, through the Kal V'chomer, includes it by kiyum mitzvah. What Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says is we have a paradigm. There is another paradigm where you don't have those balanced options, where you can't be hara l'achirim, yet we allow you to be hatava l'achirim. So the Torah already gave you an example of an exception. If that's an example of an exception, that exception should also be valid for bitul mitzvah and kiyum mitzvah. Even though you can't take a shva the vatel to mitzvah, you should be able to take a shva the kayem et mitzvah. Rabbanon, the Rabbanon say, hotam ite below etiv, hacha mi ite below akayem. The Rabbanon say there's a fundamental difference between hatavat achirim and arat achirim versus bitul mitzvah and kiyum mitzvah. And that is, when it comes to hatavat achirim, you can make a choice. You can say, I will do something that is beneficial to a party. For instance, I will gift things to an ashir. The Torah does not require you to give gifts to rich people. It requires you to give gifts to poor people. Now, you decide on your own that you want to go ahead and give a gift to a rich person. Now, you could do one of two things also. You can decide to give a gift to a rich person, and you can also decide not to give a gift to a rich person. So even though you can't do harata chirim, there is still an option that is available to you to both, yes, do it, and not do it. You can say, I will give a gift to this rich person, or I will not give a gift to that rich person. So you have a positive and negative formulation, even though it doesn't have to do with harata chirim. Even within Hatavat Acherim, you can actually have a positive and negative formulation. By Bitul Mitzvah, there is no such formulation. Because, what are your options? Your option is to say, okay, a Shavua that I will do what the Torah told me to do. Now, what's your option? I take a Shavua that I'm not going to do with the Torah? That's not an option that is available to you. So that there is no negative formulation of that same Shavua. So, even though you're right, by hatavat achirim versus harat achirim, There you have a lack of balance where you can have a positive statement, but you can't have a negative statement. But even within that positive statement, you have options to affirmatively say, I will do it, or to say, I will not do it. And so that gives you that option. When it comes to mishpat, the kayemet mitzvah, those options don't exist for you. There's only one formulation, and that is, I will do what the Torah told me to do. If you take any other formulation and say, I won't do, you don't have a choice to do that. And so there is no negative formulation that can be brought to bear in that case. And that's why the Rabbanan differentiate between the two cases. All right. So now, despite the fact that we have concluded here that the Chachamim believe that you can't take a shva, the kayemet mitzvah, there is a problem because of the Gemara in Nidarim. Gemara in Nidarim in Daf Chet says, I'm Rav Gidol Marav, minayin shenishbaim lekayemet mitzvah. How do you know that you're allowed to take a shva to mekayem mitzvah? Shenemar, they bring the pasuk from Tehilim, nishbati vekayma lishmor mishpatei tzidkecha. Ve'alo mushba v'omeid mehar Sinai. Doesn't he already have an obligation mehar Sinai? From there you conclude the sharle leinish lizruzei nafshei. The people have a right to take a shvua in order to increase the alacrity in which they do mitzvot. So now this is almost undermining everything we've said until now. We just said that Chachamim say you can't take a shvua to mekayem et mitzvah, and they argue on Rav Yehuda ben Beteira. Yet we have this Gemara in Nedarim which seems to indicate otherwise. So the Rishonim have different approaches to dealing with this. The Ran there in Nidarim, as well as the Balamor, believe that the Shvua is Chal for Malkot and not for a Korban. Which means that which is being said by Rav Gidol Marav is that you can take a Shvua to Kayim at the Mitzvah, and then if you fail to abide by that Shvua to keep the Mitzvah, you're going to be Chayav Malkot for violating the Shvua, but you will not be Chayav a Korban if you violate it B'Shugeg. And our Gemara here is speaking about the issue of Korban, and that's why the Chachamim say over here that you can't take a Shvua to Kayem et HaMitzvah. The Ramban, in his Perush on the Torah, as well as in the Gilyon HaShas, and Rabbi Kiva Eger in the Darim over there also, say that if you take a Shvua to Kayem et HaMitzvah, Einach Halal Klal. It has no application whatsoever, because Chefzei Shamayim Mufkaim. Chefzei Shemaim, anything to do with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, mitzvot the Kodesh Baruch Hu, are outside of the realm of Shvuot. And therefore, it's not a binding Shvua whatsoever. The Ritva, on the other hand, has a very interesting approach, and he says, She'ein Shvua l'kayim Shvua chala, af av yeshvua shav. He says that it's a Shvua shav. A person who takes a Shvua l'kayim et mitzvah is a Shvua shav, and that Shvuat Shav will then result in the person getting Malkot for taking a Shvuat Shav. Now, the Ritva is obviously the hardest to understand over here, because here we have Rav Gidol Marav telling you can't take a Shvua, and that you have a Pasuk from David HaMelech that seems to reaffirm it. So the Ritva over there has a very interesting explanation of it, and he says, Klomar, Ichaze d'mi'ayish min ha-mitzvot. If a person sees that he's losing his ability to do the mitzvot, he's giving up hope of mekayem a mitzvah, shari lizruzei nafshei lekiyumnu b'shvua, then he has a right to take a shvua to press himself back in to engaging with the mitzvah. Kevin the mitzvah de gufei v'kimlei de mukim shvuato lav yeshvuat shav. Since he needs the shvua to re-engage with the mitzvah, that's not called a shvuat shav. So the Ritva differentiates and says, if you stam take a shvua to kayem et mitzvah, shvua shav. If you're feeling that you're weak in a mitzvah, and therefore you want to increase your connection to the mitzvah, your obligation to the mitzvah, you take a shvua, such a shvua is mutar, and that's what Rav Gidol Marav is speaking about. Question is, how do you reconcile between the Ritva statement of shvua shav to what he's saying over here? So Rav Soloveitchik in the Rishuma Shurim makes a suggestion that the Ritva's idea is that there is one exception to the principle of Ein Shvua Chalo Shvua, and that is what's called Kritut Brit. That when you have a covenant, for instance, the covenants and the end of Parshat Bechukotai, the covenant at the end of Sefer Dvarim, both of those covenants are post Mamad Har Sinai. Isn't that a problem of Ein Shvua Chalo Shvua? They already had Naseh V'Nishma, which bound them at Har Sinai. The answer is, kritut brit is an exception. And so what Rav Soloveitchik Zhang wants to suggest is, that's what the Rifta is suggesting over here. When a person uses the shvua like a kritut brit, which is to reaffirm or to reconnect with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that type of shvua is not a shvua shav, and it's chal on another shvua. So over here, the person is weak in the mitzvah. He's not going to be able to do the mitzvah. He needs to re-engage. So he wants to re-engage with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. He has his own mini kritut brit, a covenant with God, and he does that by taking a shvua. And that's what allows him to take a shvua that otherwise would be a shvua shav, because it's under that exceptional rule, which is kritut brit, allows you to do it. And that's how he explains that position of the Ritva. So if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel here, he quotes from the Yerushalmi, Azhara l'shvuat arushut minayin. Where is the source for the fact that one who violates a shvuat rushut is chayav? Milo yachel dvaro, lo yaseh dvarav chulin. The fact that the Yerushalmi specifically says that, how do I know that a shvuat rushut is a violation of lo yachel devaro, implies that there is no lo yachel devaro with regards to a shvuat mitzvah. That would be supportive of the Ramban's view that there is no shvua chal at all, and also is difficult for the Ran and the Balamor, who suggest that there is chiyuv malkot that are associated with a shvuat l'kayem et mitzvah, because that would be lo yachel devaro. Yet Yerushalmi specifically says it has to do with a shvuat reshut and not a shvuat mitzvah. Alright, now the next Mishnah says, shvua shelo ochal kikar zo. He takes a shvua that he will not eat this loaf. Shvua shelo ochlena, shvua shelo ochlena. I take a shvua, I will not eat it, a shvua that I will not eat it. There are three shvuot over here. This is the girsa of Rashi. We'll come back later and see that the Balei Tosafot disagree and say that there's only two shvuot that are being taken in this Mishnah. Vachla. And then he eats the loaf of bread that he took these three shvuot about. Enu chayav el achat. He's only chayav for one violation, because it's the equivalent of Ein shvua chalol shvua, or the equivalent of mushpa vomed mar Sinai. Once you've taken a shvua, another shvua cannot be placed on top of it. You're already obligated by the first shvua. The second shvua is not meaningful. Zohi shvuat bitui. That is the classic case of shvuat bitui. Shechayavin al zdonah makot. If you violated it intentionally, you're going to be chayav makot. Veshkigigata. If you violated it unintentionally, korban olevi oreid. You'll be chayav korban olevi oreid. Shvuat shav. When it comes to a shvuat shav, which is a completely unnecessary shvua, chayavin al zdonah makot, val shigigata patur. If you do it intentionally, you will get malkot. If you do it unintentionally, you are patur. It's not subject to the korban olevi oreid, which is about a shvuat bitoy, not about a shvuat shav. So the Gemara says, lama li lemitne shvua shalo ochal, shvua shalo ochlena. So the Gemara's question at this point is, why did the Mishnah switch languages? It could have given you two shvuot with the same language. You could have said, shvua shlo ochal, shvua shlo ochal. Why does it say, oh, shvua shlo ochal, and then shvua shlo ochlena? Why did it change the language in the middle? Hakamash malan. That comes to teach you, taima damar shlo ochal, v'hadar amar shlo ochlena. It comes to teach you, that is, because he first said, I will not eat it. And then he says, shalo ochlena. Telo michayev elechado. In that case, you're only going to be chayav for one violation of the shvua. Aval, if you reverse the languages, and amar, shalo ochlena, I will not eat it. Vahadar amar, shalo ochal, I will not eat. Michayev tarte. You'll be chayav for two violations if you eat it. Kidurova. Like Rava explains. Dama Rava. Rava now explains that these languages have different meanings to them. Shvua shalo ochal kikar zu. A person takes a shvua that they will not eat this kikar. Kevin shachal mimena kazayit chayav. As soon as you eat a kazayit from it, you are chayav. The shvua shalo ochal, the focus of the shvua is that you will not eat. The kikar is the object of the shvua that you took. So the focus of the shvua is, I will not eat. The object is the loaf of bread. So again, any eating a kazayit then would be a violation of that shvua. Shelo ochlena enu chayav ad yochal kula. When a person says shvua shelo ochlena, the shvua focuses not on the eating, but rather on the consumption of the entire loaf. It says it's a shvua that I will not consume this entire loaf. So now, if you formulate the shvua in the following manner, which is what the Mishnah says, if you say shvua shelo ochal, the first shvua you took was, I will not even eat a kazayit from this loaf. And then you take a second shvua which says, shvua shelo ochlena, I won't eat this whole loaf. So now, you've gone from something that was smaller, a restriction of kazayit, and now you say, I won't eat the whole loaf. So there, that second shvua is not meaningful. But if you did it in reverse, if you first took a shvua shelo ochlena, I will not eat the entire loaf, and then afterwards you take a shvua shelo ochal, I won't even eat a kazayit from it, then the new shvua actually has meaning even in the context of the first shvua. It is similar to what we saw before in the Chachamim, in Rabbi Akiva, in the beginning of the Perek, which is that a person can take a shvua b'mifaresh. If you specifically say, I will not eat, and you make it that it's less than a kazayit, then you're bound by that new shvua. If you just said shvua shlo ochal according to the Chachamim, then you are only in violation if you eat a kazayit. But if you say shvua shlo ochal koshu, the Chachamim agree over there, then you'll be in violation even if you eat less than a kazayit. So if you reduce the shi'ur that you're going to be chayav for, that is an additional shvua, or that shvua now has added an additional isur that didn't exist before. Until this point in time, if you said shvua shlo ochlena, you'd only be chayav if you consumed the whole loaf. Now that you added in shvua shlo ochal, you'll be chayav even if you consume a kazayit. So at this point, if you eat the entire loaf, you'll be chayav for the second shvua once you crossed over a kazayit, and you'll be chayav for the first shvua after you finish the loaf of bread. Shvua shlo ochlena v'achla enu chayav el achat. Ha tu lamali. Why do I need this additional one? This is Rashi's girsa. And Rashi says, the Gemara is asking, why did the Mishnah add in a third shvua? You already had shvua shelo ochal, shvua shelo ochlena. That already teaches you ain't shvua chalo shvua. Why do you need a third one to say that shvua shelo ochlena? What did that add? Hakamash v'lan, chiyuvu deleka hashvuaika. Comes to teach you that you are not chayav for that shvua. That shvua still exists. Dimishkachat ravcha, if it finds space, chaylo, it will take effect. Lamai hilchata, what are the halachic ramifications of that? Likid rava, once again, rava's din, dama rava. Shim nish'al al rishona, if he goes and gets hatarat nidarim with regards, or hatarat shvua with regards to the first shvua, altolo shnia tachteha. The second shvua will take effect in its place. So that is the way that Rashi reads it. Rashi reads it for the proof is coming from the fact that he said three times the Mishnah mentioned a shvua, and Rashi says, L'hochi nakat the minyono. Why did the Mishnah add in a third shvua? To teach you in an additional din that it's important. How many shvuot you take has ramifications, because if you eliminate one shvua by a hatara, then the next shvua will take effect. You eliminate the second one, the third one will take effect. Now Rashi says that it is true by hatarat nidarim. That if he did hatarat nidarim, the implications from that are, if it was hafarat nidarim, which is the right of the husband to be mayfair his wife's nidarim, or a father's right to be mayfair his daughter's nidarim, that this wouldn't work. The reason is that hatarat works differently than hafarat. When it comes to hatarat nidarim, it is oker the item mi'ikara, lemafreya. Retroactively, it's as if the shvua never existed. So since it never existed, now the original first shvua is gone. The second shvua then retroactively took effect when you took that second shvua, because the first shvua doesn't exist anymore. On the other hand, if you have hafarat nidarim, if you nullify the nether, that is what we call prospective nullification of the nether. It's not okeret limafreya. It does not undermine it retroactively. Given that, then, when you now nullify the shvua, that means that there's the first shvua existed until this point in time. Now the first shvua terminated. Now you want the second shvua to pick up. The second shvua doesn't exist anymore. The second shvua was at a moment in time, what's called the hafla'ah. when one expresses the shvua, one articulates the shvua, that articulation of the shvua is a momentary time. If it takes effect then, great. If it doesn't take effect then, there's nothing left, there's nothing residual left to take effect. So if you do hafarat nidarim, then there is nothing to take effect. The second shvua disappeared way back in the beginning. Now you want it to take effect now when you prospectively wiped out the first shvua? That can't happen. And so therefore there's a difference between hatarat nidarim, which works the mafreya retroactively, which then allows the hafla'ah, the moment when you took the second shvua, to be effective, because retroactively the first shvua didn't exist at all, and that's why it's binding the second shvua, versus hafarat nidarim, which is prospective, and therefore the second shvua will have no impact over here. And that would be distinct from the din of ein isur chalal isur, where if prospectively the first isur somehow was terminated, that the second isur does take effect. Because there's a big difference between a shvua, which is a momentary hafla'a, which is the moment when you take the shvua, that's the only moment that matters. If it's chal, then it's chal. If it's not, it's not. It's disappeared. There's nothing left. And then an isur is a persistent problem. And so therefore, even if you have mikan alaba, some prospective change in the status of an individual, then that second isur can take effect because the isur still exists. It didn't disappear. It's not a momentary thing. And that actually would then differentiate isur chalal isur from the din of shvua. And even though it doesn't answer, it might somewhat address the question the Baalei Tosafot asked on the Amud Aleph with regards to mitzvah shemushbalim har Sinai tema. My time, manami amai, and isur chalal isur. The same logic Yehuda ben Metera uses for shvua can be used for ein isur chalal isur. But the truth is that there might be a little difference between shvua and isur. Again, it doesn't really answer the Tosafot, but Rav Soloveitchik does make that distinction between shvua and isur, and in that way explains the difference of the conclusion of the Gemara in Yevamot with regards to ein isur chalal isur, which can work mikan alaba, versus Rashi over here, who seems to indicate that a shvua cannot be chal mikan alaba. It only works if it was done with hatarat nedarim lemafreya. Now, the Baalei Tosafot disagree with Rashi based on the Gemara Nidarim, because the Gemara Nidarim, there's a Mishnah that brings a very similar Mishnah to here, but the Mishnah over there says only twice, Shvua Shelo Ochal, and Shvua Shelo Ochal. And over there, we say the same diuk the Gemara makes out of the Mishnah. So Tosafot says it can't be that it's three Shvuot that are giving you that information, but rather it is the language that the Mishnah uses, which is Eino Chayav Ela Achat. That language implies that there's more to than what you see on the surface. Because if you just want to say you're Chayav Achat, then you could have just said Chayav Achat or Eino Ela Achat. The fact that it says Eino Chayav Ela Achat, that is the diuk in the Mishnah in the Darim. And similarly over here, that is the same diuk that the Gemara is making. And so therefore, Tosafot does not have the gears of Rashi, which is ha tu lamali. It's not about ha tu lamali, but rather, it is a diuk out of Enu Chayav El Achat, ha kamash malan. The kamash malan from Enu Chayav El Achat, that language is Chayuvo Deleka ha shvua ika. Now, the Ritva claims there is actually a nafkavida between the view of Rashi and the view of the Baalei Tosafot, which is that according to Rashi, the second and third shvuot are not chal at all until you eliminate the first shvua. And that is, you need to eliminate the first shvua, and then the second one is chal. That means that if you've already consumed the kikar, then retroactively you can't then have sheila on the first one and have the second one be chal and be a violation of the second shvua. Because the shvua can only be chal while the object is still around. If you already consumed the object, then the second one can't be chal. On the other hand, for the Baalei Tosafot, who believe that there are only two shvuot over here, he believes that both shvuot are chal immediately, but one is in suspension. And so therefore, if you were to even eat the whole kikar and then eliminate the first shvua, the second shvua has already been there or is in effect because it was held in abeyance, but it was already effective from the moment it was taken. Lema misayileh. Let us bring a proof from this Mishnah with regards to a Nazir. Mishnah dar bet Nizirut, a person who takes a Neder Nizirut to Nidre Nizirut, Umana Rishona, he counted the first Nizirut. Stam Nizirut is 30 days. Person says, Areni Nazir, Areni Nazir. That person has to then keep two Nizirut. He has to do one 30-day Nizirut, and then another 30-day Nizirut. So he begins to do his first one. Mana Rishona, he did the first 30 days. Fifrish Aleo Korban. And he's already separated out the Korbanot now to finish off that first Nizirut. Vacharkach Nish'ala Rishona. And then he went and got a Hatarat Neder for the first Neder Nizirut. Altalo Shnia Berishona. The second Neder Nizirut now is fulfilled by what he did for the first Neder Nizirut. He thought originally he was keeping the first Neder Nizirut, but he went and got a Hatarat Nedarim, which eliminated it retroactively. After it was eliminated retroactively, now he can use that first Nizirut to fulfill his second Neder Nizirut. Where it says, Achiyashto, you can't compare the cases. Hotam Nizirut Mi'aita. Wait a minute, by Neder Nizirut, the Neder Nizirut is going to exist irrespective. When he takes two Nidre Nizirut, he takes one and then another. It's just a question of how he's going to carry them out. He has to do them successively, which is you have to keep one Neder Nizirut and then another one. So they both are Chal and they both are effective. He will have to keep two Nidre Nizirut. So when he eliminates one to say that the second one now comes and is fulfilled by what he did for the first one, that's not a big deal because the neder was chal. Dechimani the Rishona by Mehader Mimne Lishnia below Sheila. If there was no Hatarat Nidarim, then he would have to count the second Nizirut after he did the first Nizirut. Hacha, in our case, Shvua Shnia Miyat Teklal. If he never does Hatarat Nidarim, the second Shvua has no manifestation whatsoever. You will never have any bearing or any ramifications from that second Shvua if he keeps the first Shvua. So the two cases are completely different. When it comes to Nizirut, both Nizirut are going to take effect, just one after the other. So now when you eliminate one, the other one kicks in, that makes sense because it was already Chal. Both Neder Nizirut were effective. Here by the Shvua, you have a Shvua that you're taking. The second Shvua is meaningless unless you eliminate the first Shvua. If you never eliminate the first Shvua, the second Shvua has no bearing, no manifestation whatsoever. So you can't prove anything from Nizirut to our case of Shvua. Amar Rava, Nishba la kikar ve'achla. Person take a Shvua on a kikar and then ate it. Im shi'er mimena kazayit, if he left over from it a kazayit, nishal alei. Then he can get Hatarat Nidarim from it. Achla kula ein nishal alei. If he ate the entirety of the loaf, then he can't get a Hatarat Nidarim. And as Tosafot points out over here, nira dechilo shayer ala pachot mi kezayit, if he leaves over less than a kezayit, chayav alei, afal gav damar shelo achlena. Even if his nether was shelo achlena, which means he has to eat the entire loaf, as soon as he leaves over less than a kezayit, there's nothing significant left of the loaf. And he says, even to fulfill a nether that you're going to eat the entire loaf, or to violate a nether, to eat the entire loaf, nobody believes. You have to eat every little last crumb when you say shelo ochlena, or you say she'ochlena. And so therefore, as soon as you reach below a threshold of a kezayit in the back end, it's now become insignificant, and then you're already in violation of the nether, and you can no longer be matir the nether. So if you are not in violation of the nether, then you can have Hatarat Nidarim. If you're already in violation of the nether, then you can't do Hatarat Nidarim. Amalei Vacha Brei Rav Ravashi. Hey Chidami. What's the case? Idamar Shelo Ochal. If he took the nether that he won't eat even any kazayit, because Kezayit Kama Avrei Leisurei. As soon as he ate the first kazayit, he violated his nether. So then what's the Hatarat Nidarim? What does it have to do with leaving over a kazayit at the end? Idamar Shelo Ochlena. If he says that I won't eat the entirety of the loaf, Ma'iriya Kezayit, then why does he have to leave over a Kezayit? Afilu Koshu Unami. Any amount that you leave over at the end will still not be a violation of the Neder. Ibayitema Shlo Ochal, Ibayitema Shlo Ochlena. So we have two possibilities. One is where he took a Neder that he won't eat, even a Kezayit, and one is that he won't eat the whole thing. One way to explain it is to say that the situation is a case where he took a nether that he won't even eat a kazayin of it. Migo de mahaniyale shela kazayit batra, mahaniyale shela name kazayit kamo. Since when you take a nether shelo ochal, you will not eat it, every kazayit that you eat is a violation. So as long as you have a kazayit at the end that's left, that you could violate, and you do a teret nedarim with it, since it's efficacious in that teret nedarim for the last kazayit, it's also efficacious for the earlier kazayitim that you've already consumed. V'ibayitema, shelo ochlena, the case where he took a shvua not to eat the entirety of the loaf, ishier kazayit, choshiv lechulei alei. If he leaves over a kazayit, that's a significant amount about which to have a teret nedarim. Ilo, lo choshiv lechulei alei. If it's less than a kazayit left, it's not significant enough for you to then go and get a teret nedarim done on it. In essence, that's what Tosafot said before, that once you cross over that threshold of a kazayit, that's considered as if you've eaten the whole loaf. We can't expect you to eat up every crumb. You have to get to a point where we say that you've basically eaten the whole loaf and there's nothing significant left of the loaf. What does that mean, nothing significant? That means less than a kazayit. Okay, we're going to stop here. 7 lines down on the top of Chavchet Amud Aleph.